The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Guy who looks like a man. I play a man on TV, and since I'm not on TV anymore, then I guess that makes me just a regular old geek. That's the new theme song for the Chris Perillo Show, submitted to us by Dave Ryder. Dave, R-Y-D-E-R .com is where you can find more information about that particular guy. It's just an amazing track. I said, well, here's kind of what I'm thinking. Here's kind of what I feel. This is what I want for the theme song. And just a few hours later, he assembled such an amazing piece of work. And literally, it was just hours later. I didn't even have to tell him, no, change this, change that. He did everything. Lyrics, beat, music, everything. And I was very, very happy, very, very impressed. DaveRyder.com, DaveRyder.com. He's got a handful of other music available for you to sample and then download and buy if you'd like to. And I'm actually asking him to do some more pieces for me because I think he's such a good guy. An amazing, amazing musical artist. He's also one of the guys who, a co-conspirator to the old computer tune Computer Go Bung, which is kind of a reggae-styled, funny little song, what happens when your computer crashes. So anyway, welcome to the Chris Perillo Show. Of course, you know me, so I'm not going to introduce myself again. The show is sponsored by Microsoft Windows Media, and of course, you could listen to the Chris Perillo Show with the Windows Media Player, at least on OS X and in Windows. I know that Jeeber in the Locker Gnome chat room has been using something on Linux, and if you want to know more about that, you might want to ask him. The Locker Gnome chat room is easily accessible through the Chris Perillo Show website, thechrisperilloshow.com. Of course, chrisperillo.com also redirects there, but we'll just stick with the chrisperilloshow.com because it's more letters for you to type. You know, burn some more calories from all the Reese's Pieces you've been eating all day. Or gummy bears, as it were, as Ponzi and I have been eating all week. And we learned that about 4,000 gummy bears gives the equivalent amount of fat as a bite of an Almond Joy. 4,000 mini gummy bears. Just an amazing statistic that you'll never need to know unless you go against Ken Jennings in Final Jeopardy one of these days. So we're, of course, streaming live over the internet courtesy of Limelight Networks, and we're going to be doing that as well next week for our show. I hope to have a lineup of people that some of you are going to be meeting at GnomeDex, and others are probably going to be hearing from. And I also must note a full week ahead of time that we are going to be streaming the GnomeDex conference, at least in audio fashion, online. And so everybody's going to be able to participate. We'll have the videos available not long after, or hopefully not long after the event actually takes place. So we're trying to keep it open for everybody. Jake was telling me before the show started that there's apparently a company that would allow you to upload videos, and then they would produce DVDs on demand. So we may actually have DVDs of the show this year, and the show being GnomeDex, which of course is sold out. So now that we've got kind of the introductions out of the way, and you know, and I've adjusted my microphone to its proper position, and you've returned your tray tables to the full upright position. I was a little concerned, like right when the show music was starting, because I wasn't sure if our guest was going to be able to make it. He drove across the river, not the river, the lake, Lake Washington. He works in Kirkland, which is across the way. I live currently in Leschi, or the area called Leschi, and overlooking Lake Washington, and I can see downtown Bellevue. And you may have seen the pictures that I took on the on my Flickr account, which I was happily upgraded to from Todd Maffin, of course, from the CBC and, you know, iloveradio.org. And one of the pictures that I posted actually on Flickr last week was a picture of a gummy bear with a Darth Vader helmet. Now, I can't take credit for the inspiration of putting the Darth Vader helmet on the gummy bear. That actually belongs to Ponzi, my fiance, who's taking a break right now, and she's been working very hard on making GnomeDex happen. And it's going to be absolutely fantastic. We've got this a great two-man team, or one-woman, one-man team, but it's just easier to say two-man. And she's not a man. She's a woman. I'm not going to prove it, but you just have to take my word for it. So anyway, she was putting gummies all over my Darth Vader shelf, and she put the Darth Vader helmet on the gummy bear. And I'm like, you know, at first I was annoyed, you know, and I was like, what the hell are you doing? You don't mess with a Vader, right? And So I was like, you know what, that's kind of funny. And so I took it down, I licked the bottom of it, stuck it on the table, and started taking pictures of it, and one of them came out, and I was like, all right, so I'll post it to Flickr. And minutes later, I mean, I swear to God, some guy adds this gummy Vader as his favorite. And of course, I'm looking at the thing, I'm checking stats and whatnot, and, oh, thanks. Ponzi's awake now, she gave me some burp juice. That's Safeway Select Club Soda. That's what makes me belch in the middle of reading press releases, by the way. So, this guy adds it as a favorite. I'm like, what kind of twisted, demented mind would add this kind of photo as a favorite, right? And so I look at the profile. I'm like, wow, he's got some interesting pictures here. And I started reading more about the profile, and apparently this guy works for a game company, and a local game company at that. And this game company happens to produce one of my recently favorite video games that got me addicted for a while, at least on the Game Boy Advance, and that was Lego Star Wars. And I was amazed. Well, because the name of the company, of course, is Amaze Entertainment. And this guy, he just literally walked in the door, like as we were starting the show song, and I haven't had a chance to say hello. So hello.
Hi there.
Now, you have to pronounce your last name for me.
It's pronounced Non.
Non?
Yeah, it's G silent. It's a Cantonese name, but okay. We romanized it and just say Non. It's easier.
And where's your website so people can take a look?
My website is DannyNon.com.
DannyNon.com?
Yes.
G-N-A-N?
That's N-G-A-N.
N-G-A-N. Sorry, I apologize. Okay. See, my fiance, her full name is Latanapan Andrada Sopan.
Oh, cow.
So, yeah, she's got the full... In fact, we were at on campus, on Microsoft campus the other day, and they went to do her name tag, and they said, well, how do you spell it? I'm like, just use my last name. And she didn't take too kindly to that because we're not married, of course. But anyway, Danny, thanks for adding me adding that photo as a favorite, because that's how you're sitting here today.
It was a cool photo, and I, you know, just good time. I just happened to be browsing Flickr right at the moment, and
oh, really? So yeah, you just popped on? That's
I just happened to pop on, and it was in the big everyone's photos pool, and then, you know, see a little Darth Vader helmet on a gummy. That's pretty cool.
That's so funny.
Well, you know, I tag a lot of photos as favorites, never expecting people to contact me back, but. Hey, here I am.
So this is the strangest thing that's ever happened to you on Flickr.
Yeah, it definitely is.
So yeah, I sent you an email after learning, like I said, you know, that you happen to work for a game company. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would not be considered a huge gamer. You know, that being said, one of the recent titles that did capture my attention just because of its uniqueness was Lego Star Wars.
Right.
Did you have a hand in any of that, or were you on another project?
No, I'm actually a fairly recent addition to Amaze. I think I've been there for maybe 2.5 months now.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I've been in the area for a while now. Worked for a couple different companies. I was at Sierra right before they went bye-bye.
They're no longer around.
Yeah, Sierra got shut down last June, I believe. So it's been a year now. Yeah, big one.
I didn't realize they were gone. The last thing I remember seeing from Sierra. God, it was a couple years ago, and I realize this probably dates me, but it was King's Quest. One of the later versions of King's Quest, the one where they tried to go 3D and it just lost a lot of the
right. Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah. But I remember playing Sierra games like way back when. I mean, did Sierra had did they have Roger Wilco?
Yeah, we did Roger Wilco, the Incredible Machine series.
Okay. Yeah.
And then of course some of their big ones, like they did Tribes. Before it went, you know, all bye-bye again, but...
All right, well, before we go deep into that history, I want to hear more about you, because I mean, everything I know is, like, on the website, but, you know, you're obviously a young character. You can't be much older than 24?
I'm older than that, actually.
Oh, man.
I'm going to be 30 in a couple weeks.
Really? So you're up in our age, then?
Yeah.
See, we all look young. Yeah. It's a secret to our success.
Might be the Asian thing for me, too, you know.
You know, it's funny. Ponzi's actually 74.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right on.
And so she's looking very young for 74. apparently, it's something in the genes. I don't know.
It's genetics.
It's a good thing, I think.
Yes, yes.
So you, did you grow up in this area, or are you a recent transplant because of the job?
fairly recently. I'm originally from the Portland, Oregon area. You know, I grew up there, and I lived in Eugene, Oregon for about 11 years, and that's where I went to school, University of Oregon. You know, did my art degree, and got my first job in gaming there. That's I started with Dynamics at the time.
Okay. Now, what did they have any titles that we may be familiar with?
They're actually the ones who did a lot of Sierra's titles. Kind of a hidden name. When I was there, I worked on the Incredible Machine stuff, a bunch of the hunting titles, which you know weren't all terribly interesting, but you know,
yeah, they worked.
It worked. And a bunch of other like family titles, pinball and mini golf stuff. So pretty simple, low budget things, but you know, got me in. And then I came up here last year, just because the work situation down there was getting kind of lame. So I decided to come up here where it was even harder to find work. luckily enough, I got a gig over at Sierra for a couple months before they closed. Which I haven't had good luck with Sierra, you know.
Oh wow! Apparently.
Apparently, yeah. Yes. But things have been better since I've been up here. Actually, I started working with Microsoft Game Studios in their flight simulator division.
Oh, my dad would love you.
Oh man, it was pretty cool there. You know, great group of guys. And you know, the product's been around forever.
Yeah.
So there's you know, no question about what had to be done. So it's pretty easy on me. And then, I did some work there, and I took another job over at Amaze recently, because my focus is on animation and
okay.
not airplanes.
So the artistic side is more what you're interested in, not necessarily the gaming, or is it just gaming happens to be convenient for being an artist?
I think, well, for me, I like the game part of it just because, you know, I like playing games. It's fun to work on them, and... at least with the projects I've worked on, I've been able to play several different roles. You know, I'm not just the guy who works on the grass in the scene, you know, in a big movie or something. you know, I actually get to do all the animations for a whole series of characters, which is, you know, a lot of fun and what I actually studied in school. So, the job at Amaze was definitely something I really wanted to take, where all I had to do was animate characters. I didn't have to build airplanes. I didn't have to focus on any other little technical whatever for game development. I just make characters move on screen. So,
what kind of tools are you using on a regular basis?
Most of my days spent using Alias Maya, pretty high-end 3D software. It's used everywhere from you know, video games to big movies and stuff. Use that. Occasionally touch Photoshop because I have to work in graphics, and that's pretty much all I use right now. It's not a really complicated process, at least for me.
Do you work on one character at a time, at least in this current position? Or is it more, you have all these characters you're responsible for, go at it?
Right. I have my schedule planned out for the next 6 months, so I've got a whole list of characters and all the animations that I need to do. So I usually take one character at a time, finish everything there, move on to the next one, repeat it. Each character, you know, because it's a game, you got a lot of pretty standard animations, characters running, walking, jumping, dying. The dying one's always fun to do. But yeah, it's just...
Wait, why do you say, you got a dark side, Dan.
I got a little dark side.
I don't know if I like that about you. So I think the interview's about over here. So what's the character you're working on now?
I'm working on...
Or can you tell
me?
Yeah,
actually I can. I'm on the Pirates of the Caribbean 2 game for PSP.
Yay!
I
love the PSP and I hate Sony. I don't know how that works, but...
I'm kind of the same way, too. I'm working on Pirates of the Caribbean 2. It's due to be released same time as the movie, which is next summer, I believe. And I get to do all the animations for the zombie pirates, the bad guy human pirates, and I'm going to be starting Cannibals next week.
Wow.
Which should be pretty neat.
So when we see, in playing the game or mm-hmm. seeing the demos, are you the only person who happens to be working on those particular characters, or is it a group of people that are working on different aspects of the character animation?
It's all a team effort. Okay. I'm only handling the animation part of it. The actual character designs and models are handled by a couple other guys. It's pretty much like a production pipeline where, you know, one guy builds the model, another guy takes over and sets them up, prepares them for animation, and then eventually I get it and I get to animate. But it's kind of a free form process because the way we have our system set up, everyone can actually be working at the same time, and everything gets synchronized.
Wow.
In the end. It's pretty crazy. I've never actually done that before on any project. You know, I've always been responsible for everything start to end. But it was weird. I showed up there first week. They had me start a character. Okay, here's the character. That's not the actual character, but it's kind of like a placeholder dummy guy. So go for it. I spent a month animating one of the zombies, and I never knew what it looked like. And then one day, the character just showed up on screen, and you know the animations were working. Thank God.
But, wow.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, it's a nice team effort, which is cool. You know, I don't get isolated in my cube. I actually have to go out and talk to other people. You know.
Oh, that sucks. But
yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. But so you present this as if this doesn't happen in every game studio. This is a unique experience specifically to Amaze.
I don't think it's that unique. It actually goes both ways. You know, some places I know people get to take a specific character start to finish and do every little bit of it. And then other times, like, you know, at Amaze, you know, each person handles different parts. We have our specialties and we stick with that.
Is that the only thing you've been working on then since coming to Amaze, is this new Pirates video game?
Yeah. Yeah. It actually started up, I think, a month before I showed up. So we're still pretty early in production, you know, still going back and forth with Disney about what's cool, what's not cool. But it's still, you know, a lot of fun because every day I get to, you know, make characters run around on screen and then, you know, run the build and see the guy in the game almost immediately, which is really quite cool.
All right, so that covers the now.
Yes.
Now I'm curious to know more about the before now. So in growing up, what brought you to study art, and specifically what gave you a spin on using computers to follow that through?
I've always been around in a pretty even mix of the arts and technology since I was a kid. You know, when I was 5 years old, like pretty much every young Asian kid, I guess, you know, my mom made me study piano. Yeah, so
made you.
Made me. I didn't voluntarily go. At 5 years old, you don't voluntarily choose to study piano.
Yeah, I think I was on the accordion by four, and I was tired.
But, yeah, so I got a good dose of, you know, the artistic creative side of things, you know, starting with music. And they eventually branched out into more art studies and whatever. At the same time, you know, I was sort of the typical, you know, Asian smart kid in school. I was I was good at math, you know.
Is that also in the genes? Because I definitely missed that one.
I don't know, but I fit the stereotype pretty well. You know, I was good at math. I did speech and debate. I played tennis. You know, it was all these very, very...
highly geeky, nerdy things.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it was. but yeah, so yeah, it was cool though, because I got both sides. You know, I got to study a lot of different things. And when I started college, I actually was originally a computer science major. I wanted to really learn more about computers, specifically in the graphics area, because that was just the new cool thing. Then I realized I hated programming. I just can't stand it. And I even hated math by that point. So I figured, oh, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll try out this art thing, you know? And, somehow it worked out well, got into, the University of Oregon's art program just as they were starting to introduce more computer-based, design stuff. And so it was kind of neat for me. I kind of got in at the ground floor, got to help the department kind of try out new things. So there wasn't a set program where we had to learn certain things. It was more of a free form. Okay, here's the project. You can use the computer if you want to. And it's cool.
And then you did.
And I did. And so I did a lot of kind of digital media work, like photo montage stuff, interactive design web stuff. And it never occurred to me that games would be my eventual job. You know, this was like mid-90s,
yeah.
I guess. So, you know, games are still kind of the kid thing, the really...
Yeah, we had, I think, mid-90s would have been... We would have maybe have had... Super Nintendo would have been about the latest...
Super Nintendo, and then I think towards the end, you got the original PlayStation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right, original PlayStation, maybe the Sega, Genesis.
Atari wasn't cool yet. I mean, the retro,
right,
Atari.
The retro wasn't cool.
Right, it wasn't cool yet.
It was considered... old.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't cool yet. I remember one of my roommates in college, Steve Weib, had a TurboGrafx 16.
Oh, yeah.
With Bonk, and there's, I think it was like Hexagon type of game where you played strategically.
Right, you know.
It's kind of, I don't know how to explain it, but that was the only exposure I had to TurboGrafx 16. But the guy down the hall had, a Super Nintendo.
Right. Yeah, I remember in the dorms, I got my first dose of, the hardcore PC gaming. That's when
Doom, the original
Doom came out, and Marathon was big on the Mac side.
I never had that Mac Labs over on our campus.
We had a bunch of Mac Labs and a bunch of Mac heads in our dorm. So played Marathon. It was on those pseudo 2D, 2.5D things.
Let's see, the only Mac that my roommate was it was like a Mac Classic. So it wasn't like the Macs that we know today.
Right, I mean, right.
Maybe Quadras were out by then.
Yeah, they were, I think. It was right before the Quadras.
Was it Performas? Or
I think it was during the Performa era.
I'm not a huge Mac guy, and I'm trying to remember like 10 years ago. What were the Macs I was using? Oh, my God.
You're doing good,
though. I remember Doom just like sucked everybody in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Staying up all night in the 24-hour computer labs. I went to the University of Northern Iowa, and so completely distanced from the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
And it was like liquid crack, and you could tell what time it was depending on how many people were coming in, because you knew that this computer lab closed at this time, that computer lab closed.
Right.
And every once in a while, like, geeks would filter in at a certain time. Oh, I guess it must be 2 o'clock because Redeker's closed or whatever it was, and more people would filter in, and everybody be dooming right there in the LAN.
Yeah, I remember that. We didn't have any 24-hour labs at University of Oregon, which really sucked.
No, because we didn't have broadband back then. There's no way you had broadband on campus. There's no way, dude.
I don't think so. I don't think so. We all played local network games, though. So, we didn't have any, 24-hour labs, but we had a lot of friends who worked in various labs on campus. So
he get to know them real quick.
Oh, yeah. So we took over, of all things, the language lab. Somehow they had all the coolest computers in there.
Yeah.
It was really bizarre. We got in there. We spent all night playing games. It was just the coolest thing.
I kind of got into it for, maybe a day or two, but then I was like, I got work to do. And I was more interested in the writing side of things.
Right.
And the part of the internet that was more communication rather than the gaming aspect.
Right.
So if I had an artistic spin, it would have been more in the creative writing aspect, not necessarily the visual. Even though I enjoyed the visuals very much so. Yeah. So you got your degree, and you went right into gaming.
Yeah, I got the job within 2 weeks of graduating.
But I'm trying to make a connection here. You wanted to be an artist, but you weren't sure if you were going to do gaming until what point?
Until I actually walked in and applied for the job.
Okay, so that was it.
Yeah, the first game company I worked at is Dynamics, and they were located across the street from the University of Oregon.
That's convenient.
I didn't even realize it until my senior year. One of my classmates got a temp job there, and he ended up becoming one of their senior artists, later on down the line. But he first got in, started learning stuff, and telling me all about the cool things that they're working on. This was back when they were still making the original Tribes.
Wow. I remember, I applied for a job of pixel shader. I mean, it would have been my responsibility to go in and shade every single pixel with, they had graphite pencils that you'd have to it was so trying. I'm so glad the video card does it now. Back then, you had to shade each individual pixel.
I did my share of that when I first started. Oh, man. That was some pain.
I bet.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine that 10 years from now, how much easier it's going to be.
Oh, it's already gotten easier in the last 7 years now.
What makes it that way? The tools?
I think so, yeah. It's just the tools are finally catching up to the way people think and work. Or we've just adapted so well that it's second nature for us. I just remember first starting out, we had so many technical requirements that we had to hit. Well, no, not requirements, technical limits.
Oh, sir, like on the back of the box, you had to have this speed CD-ROM.
We were concerned with CD-ROM speed, the resolution of a monitor, which is something we just don't even think about now. Little things like that, it just made the work a lot more challenging. And now, it's pretty much freeform. Especially on the PC end, if it runs on our machines, it's probably going to run on someone else's machine, no problem.
So I know a lot of folks out there, I mean, more folks are avid gamers rather than game developers. Mm-hmm. If someone, you know, were to take an interest in possibly pursuing, you know, being an animator much like yourself, mm-hmm. what are some of the things they could use to prepare themselves for that kind of, I guess, position or career in the industry?
Mm-hmm. Specifically on the art side, it's definitely important to actually study art. The computer part of it is completely secondary. You know, by this point, you know, I think most people have just grown up with computers, so it should be pretty easy to learn your way around. The part that may not come as easily is the actual art and design training. I've known a lot of people who have been able to sort of teach themselves as they go, you know, picking up books, talking to people, actually meeting industry pros and kind of mentoring with them. But for the most part, you know, going to an art school, you know, is probably the best thing to do, since you actually get, you know, a structured program. You know, you get exposed to a lot of different areas of art that you may not have thought about on your own, or you may not even think it's related to games. But yeah, doing that, studying the art stuff, and of course playing games and really observing, you know, the art in the games, not just how it plays or how cool it is, you know, but paying attention to the how much effort was put into the design of things. Like recently, one of my favorite games that I've been playing is Jade Empire on the Xbox.
Okay, sure.
You know, it's not a groundbreaking game by any means, but from just a pure artistic side, you know, it's very well done. You know, they have the tiniest little details on the walls that kind of go back to ancient China, which is what a lot of the game is about. But those things don't come from, you know, just reading everything. You have to do some study in art and understand how these design elements fit together, why they were used on doors in, say, like a tea house or something. I think a lot of that is just where the general art training comes in, how to think like an artist, how to think visually, not so much on the technical side.
How much feedback do you have in terms of, as the character develops? Now, you're obviously animator, so mm-hmm. you animate actions. But in terms of how those actions are animated, I mean, is it really your ball game, or?
Mostly it is completely mine. They brought me on because I have, you know, I have quite a bit of experience, so they want me to be able to just jump in and start doing the work. There is a basic look and style that we have to hit, but beyond that, as far as how specific actions are carried out, it's pretty much up to me, you know, put my own personal touch on it without going too far away from the whole Pirates universe.
So you've never, like, actually put a bit of yourself into a character before?
I always do, actually.
Really? Is this something like in the shower you're practicing, like, oh yeah, I can stab that way, and you're like practicing the stab?
Not in the shower, but
around
the office I do all the time.
So no one even notices that people are doing these weird, they just think you're...
Yeah, no one really cares. They, you know, they know that the animators have a tendency to get up, walk around, and actually act out a lot of the stuff, especially for more complicated things, you know, like fight moves, seeing how different people walk, how you might run or jump across, you know, a block or something.
All right, so you got this job. Let's go with the recent job, Amaze Entertainment. In fact, I'm pretty sure you got the job by, and someone made this comment in the chat room, you remember the, can you draw this picture? They had you draw a picture of the pirate and then say, yeah, this guy would be good for the pirate. Is that what you had to do? What's the job interview like?
Well, for Amaze, what I did was I went to this game industry job fair that was held up in Shoreline.
Oh, really? I didn't realize they had job fairs.
I didn't realize it until earlier this year. Normally, I would just, you know, look at job posting sites, the company websites, and
Craigslist,
see if they have any openings.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, little things like that. But I saw an announcement from, I can't remember which game website, that there was a job industry job conference. A game industry job conference up in Shoreline. I said, oh, okay, it's a little 40-minute drive for me. So headed up there, and you know, it was a small little event. It was held at one of their community centers, and it was really designed more for people new to the industry, recent graduates, but there were company representatives there. And so I left my resume with the guys at Amaze, and the following Monday I got a phone call. He said, you know, we took a look at your resume, looked at your site, and, you know, we'd like to talk with you some more. But first, we'd like you to do some test animations. And, you know, this is a pretty common thing, especially for animators, to, you know, try to do a test with one of their files, not something that you've done on your own ahead of time, but you have a set character with specific actions you have to do in a set amount of time. So part of it is to gauge, you know, how well you can work on schedule and what you can do with their files, see if they if you have what they're looking for. And so they gave me a week to do the animations. I was already...
That's a long interview. You got to go home, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. They sent me the file so I could work on them at home. Oh,
okay. I was, like, kind of freaking out.
Oh, man,
I didn't
know
if they, like, put you in a room for a week.
Oh, man.
Said, here's a can of Coke. Have at it.
That would have been crazy.
Yeah. That would have been one crazy animation. You know?
Oh, man.
Especially the latter stages of the animation. It'd just be all over the map.
I'd just be totally gone.
So you worked on it for a week then?
No, I was working at Microsoft at the time. So, you know, with the full-time job, it was really hard to put in extra time after work. So I spent about probably like 14 hours on the weekend. There are three really simple animations, like a walk animation, kind of like a big combo attack thing, and then sort of a standing around, you know, fidgeting type of thing. Mostly what they were looking for was if I could actually get that done within a week and then give them my time estimates. I think each animation took me like 2-3 hours to get done, and then I spent the last bit of time, you know, making it look pretty perfect. Sent that back to them, and they called me in for an actual interview.
So that was the pre-interview.
That's the screening second screening process.
Oh my god, they wanted to see if you were just an absolute moron, like, you know, if you actually handed in animation cells.
Yeah.
Here, this is what I got here.
Right.
Be careful, it's still wet on the top layer there.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is also, you know, you can look at someone's work on the web, but you really don't know how much time they put in on it, put into it. You don't know how they worked or if anyone else helped them. So, or if, you know, the person's completely dishonest and stole someone else's work, which has happened before. But yeah, so it was sort of an extra screening process. Did it, got the personal interview, went in and met with three people in a conference room. And at that point, it wasn't anything about my work. It was really about meeting me, talking about the way I work, what I'm interested in, what my goals are. And also for me to learn more about the company. And I think after that, the GDC, the Game Developer Conference, happened, so I had to wait 2 weeks for a response. Kind of a long wait. But eventually they called me back and said, let's sign the paperwork. We want to hire you in. Like, cool.
That was pretty easy, you know, for a week or 3 month long interview process.
Yeah.
How long would it take? And then it would have taken that week, then you went in for the interview, then you had to wait another 2 weeks.
Yeah, another 2 weeks. So it probably took about a month.
About a month.
Yeah. And then they hired me, and I couldn't start for another 3 weeks.
Oh, because you hadn't
I was finishing up my contract at Microsoft.
Oh, so you were just a contract worker at Microsoft at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Microsoft tends to hire a lot of people on a contract basis first.
All right. Well, it's good to know. I'm sorry. I want to give you a little breather here because we've kind of been talking for the past half hour straight, and I don't know if we've got what we have queued up. It'll be a surprise for me too, though.
Okay.
Jake's got a few other side things that we've pre-recorded for everybody's listening pleasure. But take a listen, and then we'll be back with Danny
Non.
Man, I'm never gonna get that Non.
It's all right.
N-G-A-N. Let me ask this question kind of for Ponzi. If you could develop a video game, what kind of video game would you want to see developed that you just either haven't seen yet or you haven't had a chance to play yet, Ponzi?
Oh,
Wait. Let's go Danny first and then Ponzi.
Okay. Yeah,
it's a good
Danny
question
first.
For both of you.
Oh, wow. Man, that's a good question. You know, I am of the opinion that there really aren't any new game ideas out there. Because most of them have been done, and if they haven't been done, there's a reason. You know, they are bad ideas that generally don't work as games. So personally, I would love to work on, you know, a really goofy kart racing game. You know, I'm a huge Mario Kart fan, Crash Team Racing, those types of things. Because that's like the best combination of everything. You got this great action, cool characters, cool animation. And it, you know, can be a really intense gaming experience where you just have to sit there and play and beat the whole tournament, or you could, you know, play really quick, pick up the controllers, play one race, set it down, walk away. You know, it's like a nice balance for me.
All right, Ponzi. So if you had a game that either you haven't seen or hasn't been created yet, what would you want that game to be?
That's a really hard question. I'm not really a big gamer. The games that I like are either They're interaction games, so I don't like to just sit with the controller in my hand. I'd rather play, like, the shooting games where I actually have a gun and I can stand up and get in a stance and shoot and feel like I can interact more. Or I like DDR, Dance Dance Revolution, where I can bust a move or something like that. I'm not a really big gamer. I feel like games personally kind of waste my time. Once I find a game that I like, I don't really find one that I can just play for 5 minutes and then walk away. And I don't really feel like games are geared towards women a whole lot. They really aren't.
Danny, so. how do you take offense to that statement?
No, I don't actually. I mean, I go through periods like that too. You know, I just
where you feel like a woman and you don't.
Oh yes, yes. there are times where I just, you know, feel like, I sometimes spend too much time playing games, you know.
But you get paid for doing that, so yeah, it's kind of different.
Technically,
you know?
Yeah. It's my day job, too, so, you know, I can get overdose a bit. But, yeah, there are times where, you know, it seems like it's just the same old game, you know, out there. Really isn't anything that interests me or that it's worth me spending, you know, 40 hours playing. And, you know, that's just sort of.
I kind of like them. Let's see. So, to answer the question, I'd say I like characters that evolve. So, when I played Sims, it was okay for a little bit. I think it took too long for the character to evolve, but I thought that was interesting. I kind of like that one. What was another one that I liked? I'm trying
Silent
to.
Scope.
Silent Scope. But, that's not an evolving character.
There's no evolution
bang,
there.
Vice City was okay, but it was just a little too violent for me. It wasn't my kind of a thing. But I like the way the characters evolve, and you can move around town and do different things. So more than just fighting. I wish you could make someone, you know, choose a different career and see what path they would go on inside that career. Or if they made a certain decision, you know, within that career and it didn't work out or something like that. More of a storyline. I guess women mm-hmm. would be more attractive to that kind of
you would totally get sucked into, like, Star Wars Galaxies or Evercrack.
Oh, I don't know about any of that.
And that there's a reason for that. I'm shielding you from these experiences.
Very wise.
So in hearing what Ponzi's saying, Danny, I mean, how can a game industry, you know, respond to those kinds of things, or have they already?
I think there's a movement to, you know, take into account that, you know, women actually do play games, and they're not all, you know, young, you know, 18 to 24 males who love to shoot things and look at, you know, scantily clad women. I personally haven't, you know, seen the products, but I know there are groups like Women in Gaming, Women in Animation, you know, are trying to develop products that are suitable for a wider range of audience. Beyond that, you know, there isn't much that's you're seeing in the big media or in the gaming magazines, you know, because that's really not what sells these magazines and the games, unfortunately.
Right.
But I know there's stuff being done. There's actually a great website out there. It's called Wonderland. But this woman named Alice. She's a game developer. And she talks a lot about, you know, women and girls and how they play games and, you know, what interests them. I'll have to look it up. It's she has a great blog that she posts to all the time.
Certainly, yeah. We'll link back to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in knowing that Ponzi's not a gamer, I mean, would you ever want to develop like a virtual boyfriend type of game where the character just develops and she could tell the character what to do over time, dress him differently?
I have one of those in real life. What are you talking about?
A virtual boy toy?
Well, I mean, like a Tamagotchi for, like, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend
right.
type of thing. You know, virtual relationship. Does that this not make sense? There's probably a reason this hasn't been invented yet.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
That could be interesting, I guess.
I'm not asking for anything. I was just asserting it as, you know, a possibility for gameplay for some reason.
Someone's trying it, I think. I read a news post earlier today that someone in New York is trying to develop this virtual boyfriend thing. I'm not sure if it's an actual game, but, you know, they kind of try to treat it like a game. It's an interactive thing.
See, y'all thought I was nuts.
Oh, we know you're nuts. That's not in a question.
I think that's actually kind of like some of the old text games, though, where it's more like an interaction, but it's not necessarily like trying to have like a Sims type environment.
Right.
But you can just get so sucked into that, it becomes a giant time suck, and then you don't have a real life because you're just online doing your fake life. Do you know what I mean? I mean...
So that's not something that's attractive to you?
No.
At all. Now,
if it were my business and I were making money at it, then it'd be different. You know, if I just had time to do that and focus on it and see the artistic side, then maybe it would be more appealing to me. But knowing that it's just going to be a time suck and it doesn't help me in my business in any way, then no, I don't.
Now, in playing a video game, Ponzi, what are the things that you notice in playing a video game?
I noticed when I'm pointing the gun and it doesn't actually hit. So I don't know what that's called, the calibration of my gun.
Like in the actual game experience itself, do you notice a lot of the details, or are you just more focused on the goal at hand? Do you notice a lot of the subtleties as far as design?
I don't think you're realistic at all. I don't really get into the caricatures that much. I'd rather them be more realistic. So there was one, I can't remember the name of it, that was more realistic. It was like it was a driving game. Of course, this is awful because I don't know the name of it. But
there can't be that many driving games.
I'm sure there are tons. But they seemed, the majority of the games seem really, really violent. I don't see any that are interactive, except for like Silent Scope, because then I can choose to go to a range and just shoot at a range. I don't have to shoot people. So to me, that's more.
That's very psychologically sound, that you would rather shoot at a range rather than shoot people.
Very, very smart.
I'm very happy to hear that answer.
I'm sure.
Now, Danny, you were kind of nodding your head almost in unison to what Ponzi was saying. I mean, I'd imagine that this you kind of come under attack in the game industry as being too violent.
Yeah, that's a pretty common thing, especially when you consider all the top sellers. The ones you hear about, you see commercials for, are all war games, first-person shooters, GTA, which isn't exactly, a family-friendly game. That's all you see out there. So people tend to think that that's all games are. We know that there are other games out there. It's just they're not, puzzle games, nice, cute little family, Animal Crossing. Things like that. They are, they're fun games. They're really nice games, but they just don't bring all the media attention that a lot of the game studios and publishers really love.
Now that you say that, when I do want to take a break, I will play one of Chris's games. It's a puzzle game, a Mahjong, I think. Who's the creator of that one?
You're using, I think it's Kyodai Mahjong. KOYADI.com, Kyodai Mahjong.
I really like that. It gives me a 5-10 minute break, and it has some relaxing music, and I can just take my mind away from my work, but then I don't get so wrapped up in it that I can't just stop and then move on to the next thing.
Right.
If I just need a little brain break, from the text and go to something colorful, that's cool.
Yeah, those little puzzle games, like the Mahjong, the card games. I heard a statistic a while ago that the vast majority of the people who play in those games and buy in those games are women in their late 20s and mid-30s. And it's for the reasons that you mentioned. It's just like a little casual thing that they can just take a quick break, play those games, either while they're at the office, waiting for something, or at home, doing whatever. And they're just really simple games. And it's just weird that the vast majority of players are women who play those.
That's so true.
No, wait, is that not a market? Because to me, that just sounds like a market that's underexploited.
No, it is.
Underexploited. Really?
Sorry. I mean, it's just, anyway, go ahead and answer the question, Danny.
I don't think it is underexploited. They've actually known about this, based off of the buyer profiles for a long time. And, places like PopCap Games, I think they're right in Seattle.
Really?
They look at that demographic, because they market their games on Yahoo Games, on MSN, a bunch of other portals. A lot of the products that they build are these really simple puzzle games that people can just play very quickly. And it just so happens that their primary audience is women.
I think that's really awesome. It's true, because it's a little brain break, and it gets you thinking in a different way. Then you can just drop and go right back to work.
So you'd rather have thinking kind of games?
Yeah, but in a playful, fun, with little, light music, I think that's part of it. It's working the other side of my brain for a few minutes so that I'm not just constantly concentrating on on text and reading and moving to the next email or the next problem. I can just stop and play Pop It on AOL. I know, I can't believe I just said that, but I used to play that. It's like this little game that you just, it's like a little puzzle game. You pop the balloons and you try to get to the top, or, I mean.
It's like Circus Atari almost. Well, not really, but.
It's silly. You know, it's little, like, old games are like Tetris or things like that that are just really simple, but
right.
Just give you a brain break for a moment.
A brain break in games. Mm-hmm. Is this a new paradigm or an old
no,
paradigm?
No, I don't think so. When I take breaks at work, I play Lumens on my PSP.
Oh, yeah.
What's Lumens?
Yeah. I haven't quite gotten into it yet. Largely, I've been on the PSP, I've been playing Wipeout Pure or Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
So you can describe Lumens.
Lumens is a Tetris-like game.
Hmm.
Because of the PSP's, you know, horizontal orientation, you don't have the top-down of Tetris, but it plays the same fashion. So the object is to stack these blocks into groups of fours, little squares, and there's this vertical bar that slides across the screen and basically clears off anything that is a group of four or larger. And the challenge that comes in that sometimes the bricks fall faster and the bar moves slower, or the bar moves really fast and it breaks far really slow, so you don't have a lot of time to build up combos. And then, like Tetris, you know, each level gets faster and faster and faster. But what's also different is they change the graphics, the colors and design of the pieces, so your eyes are forced to completely change what it's looking at. And initially it starts off with these white and orange blocks, which are really easy to look at. Then it starts getting, you know, blue and white, red and green, black and white, and in all sorts of funky color combinations. So you have to constantly adapt while the timing is changing, the pieces falling faster. And like Tetris, it's, you know, it's one of those kind of addictive games where once you start playing, you have to keep playing, keep playing, keep playing.
That sounds really fun. I'd be interested in checking that one out.
Well, we have it in the other room, so you can.
It's actually quite cool.
You know, I've heard those kind of games can keep you from getting Alzheimer's disease, old timer's disease.
When did you hear this?
I don't know. Like on some Dateline 60 Minute special kind of thing that people who work their brains and do crossword puzzles and different kind of word puzzles and things like that actually helps stave off Alzheimer's disease.
Now, your perspectives, Ponzi, do you think that's more indicative of women in general or just you? Just curious.
Women in general.
Why do you say that, though?
Why? Because I'm typical. I don't think I'm any different than the majority of my age group.
How would, in that sense, you think males interact with video games differently than females?
In a general level,
or
yeah.
Or they want
I
to.
I think so, yeah. I don't, the majority of the women that I know play the same four or five games. And if they do pick up a new game, like for instance, we have friends down in LA, Jocelyn, and a friend of hers that played Sims for a while, and the same thing. They told me that they got sucked into it, and after a while they're like, okay, whatever, this is taken away from my regular life playing with this fake life, so why would I keep doing it?
And then the game industry comes along with a new addiction.
Right.
And says, here, eat this. So now, you know, gaming, obviously, you know, is you know, as I said before, kind of this huge thing that it's almost, I don't want to say an overnight sensation, but it just kind of crept in. Like, you know, it's, Hollywood was big, and then all of a sudden now gaming just seems to be the focus of everybody's attention. You know, Microsoft with their Xbox, and of course, you know, the PSP just recently being released. How much faster is this going to get?
Wow. I actually think it's kind of hitting a plateau very soon. You know, granted, it's only been in recent years that games have sort of become a huge, you know, media phenomenon. You know, we have movies based on games, games based on movies, you know, celebrities being in games. You know, it just happened, you know, games are around at the right time. You know, just, you know, Hollywood is, you know, doing the same stuff over and over again, at least as far as, you know, the general public's concerned. So games are the next thing, because all the people who grew up with games are now running the studios, the people who are, you know, making the movies, so it's just like a natural transition. But, you know, it has such a fast growth over the last few years that, you know, we're running out of ideas, running out of new things to do. So the only thing that we're seeing now, especially with, you know, the upcoming Xbox 360 and the PS3, is just, you know, bigger, fancier graphics, but the games are still the same. You know, we're still going to have, you know, the next version of Madden Football. We're still going to have a racing game, you know, version 12 of whatever shooter is coming along. But yeah, it's just kind of going to level out and become sort of like what Hollywood was. You know, it's just, you know, going to be another thing.
A whole bunch of males in charge. Pretty much.
Maybe
is that what it's going to take to get a little creativity to throw a few females into the mix?
I think it would be a great thing. You know, at Amaze, I was actually surprised when I walked in there, where there's a, you know, I think a good quarter of the company is actually female. Mm. And for most game studios, that's unheard of. You know, you'll be lucky if you have one or two, you know, in a department. But, you know, Amaze is a pretty big company. So, you know, we got a large percentage of women. And the other part is we are doing a lot more kind of education children's titles. And it's just, you know, less male-centric products. So we're going to attract more people to come in, work on the games, create more games that are applied to a wider audience, you know, and, you know, just get, you know, women involved a lot more. But like at a lot of other studios, you know, they're still building the games that are going to make the big bucks, get the attention. They're going to build the games for the guys.
You know. That makes sense.
So I have a question. I've heard, or I read it somewhere, an article where there's a new game that involves creating an emotional attachment to the character. So you're first person and you run with this little girl. And have you heard of this game?
No, I haven't.
And so I'm wondering, is your company doing anything along those lines where you actually evolve with the character on an emotional level?
As far as I know, we're not doing anything like that, but that sounds really cool,
actually.
I'll
have to find that link and send it to you.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That's a different space. Instead of, you know, going and shooting all the characters,
yeah, no kidding.
You're going to create a, you know.
Get emotionally attached.
Yeah.
You know, there was this game that I had just heard about recently, and I'm drawing a blank on the name, but the whole premise of the game is basically you have, like, this virtual pet that you can only, like, feed it at certain times. And if you're out and you get back at 10 o'clock at night or something, the thing's already asleep, so you can't feed it or take it out. And it will get sick as a result because it's not getting enough attention. So it's on this, like, crazy schedule.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of cool. That could
well, but it mirrors life. So, well,
responsibility for a kid or something. Instead of the opposite, killing stuff, you have to take care of something.
But at the same time, that means you have to plan your life around the game, because the game, unless you do like some sort of bizarre time shift on the game, on like the clock on your like game system, then it's like at 10 o'clock. That you have set on there, you have to do a specific thing. At 6 o'clock, you have to do a specific thing.
So then you're tied to the machine.
You're tied to
the
machine.
The egg. Do you remember the egg in school? Did you guys have that where your teacher made you carry around the egg?
Oh yeah, yeah, I did that.
And take care of it, and if it broke, then your little egg died.
I remember that. That was our sort of a health home ec type class thing.
I think that was like what, 12 or 13, when you're learning responsibility.
Well, you have to break a lot of eggs to make an omelet. That's all I have to say. My egg did not survive. So I think we're about ready to take another breather here and let Ponzi get back to her regular routine. And I think she's itching to go play Lumens now. She wants to see it. She's going to be playing it, I'm sure, now. And Gnome Dex isn't going to happen. Thanks.
You're welcome.
It's not your fault. I already had the cartridge, so it's no big deal.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.